You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. Mean Machine, a towering display from Newcastle's defence, frustrates Old Trafford. Media Machine, Eels and Ashworth take on the press pack. And Perpetual Motion Machine, two games in 4 days as the World Cup fixture crunch begins. Yes, hello, this is Pod on the Tyne. I am Taylor Payne, and it's very pleasing to be able to welcome George back to the pod, even though he hasn't quite returned from the good old US of A. George, how the devil are you over there on the other side of the world?
Well, I do feel like a long way away. Yes, good morning to you as it is here. Good afternoon to you, London. This is London, this is Portland calling. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm coming home later today, actually, but wanted to do the pod this week. How can I not, after all these great results? And yeah, doing all right. Missed you.
You've been a huge miss, by the way.
I've listened to the podcast, Taylor. I know you're talking absolute shit there, so you've done very well.
Chris has missed you so much.
You've done very well without me.
He's just not been himself.
No, I'm the wind beneath Chris's wings. He wouldn't want to acknowledge that publicly, but it is the truth. He's lost without me.
Are you all right now, Chris? Now you've got your mate back.
I was feeling better before I just listened to that drivel from Colgan there.
It was drivel.
But I am good, thank you. Yeah, I was Old Trafford yesterday, and I've not returned for once, having just lost count of how many goals Manchester United put past Newcastle United. Yeah. So that was good in that sense. So yes, I'm feeling good.
Good stuff.
Well, I got up at 5 o'clock yesterday morning to watch that match. Started at 6 o'clock over here. So I was sitting in front of the telly on my own with a strong cup of coffee, but it's quite difficult to get used to those rhythms, the slightly different rhythms over here. But no, it was great, just great to be able to do that. And yeah, exactly as Chris says, see Newcastle go there and not get humiliated, quite the opposite.
I went out for a lovely walk down at the coast before the game kicked off. I thought I'd get myself all prepared, go for a lovely walk. And as I'm driving home, I had the radio on. And who would appear on the radio? Well, he wouldn't appear. He would appear in sound, making a mockery of broadcasting. It's our very own Chris Woff. And then after the game, later on, I turned on YouTube and had a look at Eddie Howe's press conference. And who's got his massive head right in the middle of the camera? Yet again, it's none other than Christopher Waffles. You're everywhere, aren't you, Chris? Which you can't get rid of you.
I did accidentally delay the start of that press conference because I forgot how to turn on my dictaphone, so I was stood at the front for a good couple of minutes and they were looking at me.
He is becoming increasingly ubiquitous on our airwaves.
He is, isn't he?
I think this should be stopped. It's like, who are those actors you turn the television on that they're always in something? He's like one of those,
yeah,
isn't he?
I know what you mean.
He's one of those.
You can't remember their name, but they're always there.
They're always there being annoying.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, speaking of being annoying, Newcastle United certainly annoyed Manchester United yesterday, didn't they, Chris? 0-0 at the end of the game. The impenetrable defence, it's easy for you to say, had three goals at that. Botman and Cher really put in a shift, and we ended up going away with a point. Not a bad result altogether.
It wasn't, and just before I get on to the defence, Newcastle certainly did wind up the Old Trafford crowd, which I have to say was brilliant. I thought it was absolutely wonderful to hear how frustrated everyone was. And I know you tweeted about it, you got very angry, Taylor, at Cristiano Ronaldo and his, what looked like his little children, his fellow classmates.
Honestly,
surrounding
pathetic.
The referee. Yeah.
Pathetic. With his schoolyard bollocks. chasing the referee around the pitch.
Yeah, with a goal that was never a goal. It was just like the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, yeah.
Honestly.
I don't even think he actually really believed it was a goal. So that was the weirdest bit of it all.
Sir, he took the free kick already, sir. Tell him. It's a goal.
The beautiful thing about that, the last time Newcastle were at Old Trafford, I think that was Ronaldo's first game, wasn't it?
It was.
Ronaldo scores a couple and it was like Old Trafford welcoming the prodigal son home. Newcastle lose 4-1. You know, just the contrast with that. I mean, I know we think a lot and talk a lot in terms of contrast, but Ronaldo getting subbed off after whatever it was, 70 minutes, grumping his way on the bench.
Tripped over his lip on the way off,
didn't
he?
Yeah, shaking his head. And just as a, you know, as a Newcastle fan, that's just such a beautiful thing to see. And, you know, again, Newcastle going to one of the great traditional grounds. And the only thing you could hear on the telly over here was Newcastle fans singing.
Absolutely.
And so those just those two things together, Ronaldo sulking off and the silence of the stadium, just brilliant, brilliant.
But in terms of the defence, Taylor, I mean, this is what, I'll be honest, after about an hour of the game, I was trying to think about what I was going to write about, and I was a little bit unsure on that stage, because in some ways it was a bit of a nothing match, certainly the second half in bits, but then you actually think about it, and first of all, Newcastle have gone to Old Trafford and they've kept a clean sheet, which was the fourth of the season. And this is a side who, last year, across the course of 2021, Newcastle set the unwanted Premier League record of conceding 80 goals in a calendar year.
Yeah.
And this year, they've completely transformed that under Eddie Howe, and they now have the best defensive record so far in the Premier League this season, conceded only 9 in 10 games. And considering two of those matches have been at Anfield and Old Trafford, where historically Newcastle have regularly conceded 4 and 5 goals at each, they've also played Man City at home. 3 of those goals were conceded against Man City, actually. And what's wonderful about the defence as well, it's not like Newcastle are sitting back as they were previously. This is a team who are trying to take the game to the opposition. They are playing higher up the pitch. They are looking to be more offensively dominant. And yet, aside from really 2 chances in the last 5 minutes, Man United didn't really look like scoring. Botman and Cher were wonderful together.
They were.
At centre-back. I thought Cher was man of the match. He was absolutely tremendous. Basically ran himself in the ground in the end and had to go off because he couldn't.
And he got battered all over as well, didn't he?
He did. And then at right back, Kieran Trippier, really, really good once again. His delivery, certainly first half from set pieces, was brilliant. And then Dan Burnett at left back. Yeah, I understand that some fans are frustrated by seeing him there, and I can understand why to a certain degree, but I thought that he played relatively well. I thought he kept Anthony quiet. A couple of times he got beaten for pace, but then they managed to sort of reshape it a little bit and make sure that he didn't keep getting done. But then it's also the rest of the team, that the work rate that goes throughout the team to really make Newcastle such a solid defensive unit. That is, of all of the post-takeover transformations, the fact that Newcastle have the meanest defence in the Premier League after 10 games so far this season is up there with the most extraordinary.
It's incredible.
You said in your excellent piece there, which I love the headline of it, because it's just Newcastle United : mean. You've then said that, you know, Newcastle United have the best defensive record in the Premier League. It may not be the sexiest sentence that supporters have read over the past year, but I think that is sexy. I'm turned on by this, by that version.
Say it again.
I mean, I am turned on by Fabian Scherer. I mean, that's like all red-blooded men and women, because he's gorgeous, fucking gorgeous. But that is sexy. I mean, seeing your team go to Anfield and irritate the fuck out of Liverpool, seeing them go to Manchester United and have the skill to do what they did yesterday. It's not anymore. It's not just about sitting back, taking a pounding. If you're lucky, getting away with it. And if you're not, probably getting hammered. This was an aggressive form of defence. You know, the first half in particular, they're pressing high up the pitch. They're trying to make De Gea make mistakes. They're doing that. They were the better team by far in the first half, I thought. And yes, it was a different Manchester United after half time, but I think that level of commitment, that level of skill. I don't think you mentioned Botman there when you talked about the defence, Chris. I think he's turning into a.
Unbelievable.
I think we're now seeing what Newcastle bought, to put it that way, and he just looks a quality Rolls Royce kind of player. I've seen that description of him a lot on social media, but that's what he is. He just purrs when he plays. It's beautiful. So I think it is sexy. I think it's sexy. I was really proud of that. Of that performance yesterday. I thought they were excellent.
I think first half Newcastle went and did have a go And then second half, I don't know whether it was fatigue. They looked leggy, actually, second half, which I was surprised by because Man United had played on the Thursday night. They were the team you thought might tire second half. Newcastle looked a bit leggy and really weren't enough of an attacking force after the break. And basically, for the last 20 minutes, Jason Tindall and Eddie Howe were stood on the touchline urging the team to get higher because they just kept on dropping deeper and deeper. And that did look reminiscent of the previous Newcastle in some ways. But for the first half, I thought that they did give it a good go, and it, by the break, were probably unfortunate not to be ahead.
Yeah, I said it towards the end of the first half, they're not going to be able to keep this tempo up. They're going to be knackered. And when they came out in the second half, it did look like they'd taken the foot off the gas. Ten Hag, he described the match as physical, but he was delighted, apparently, to match Newcastle. He called us one of the fittest sides in the league, and, you know, we did, like you say, we did run out of steam a little bit. We used five subs. Man United only used one, George. But those changes were made, and it did change the game a little bit. Newcastle dropped a lot deeper, but they still contained Man United. They only had three shots on target in the entire game.
If you think about what Nick Pope had to do or not do, there wasn't much, was there? Because they didn't breach through to that point, albeit they did have those two very good chances towards the end. And I mean, I think we have to say when we praise Newcastle's performance in the first half, I think we have to also recognise that was a very poor Man United team. That was a poor Man United first half. But again, you do have to reach for context. And, you know, the context is that I don't think Newcastle have conceded more goals to any other team in the Premier League than they have to Manchester United. We know that they've only won once at Old Trafford since the 70s, since the early 70s. So it's a one-off game, but it's not a one-off game in the context of this season. This is very much a theme of this Newcastle. And they're physical. And you know that you're going to get a shift from everybody. One of the things I really like, which I've obviously not been able to speak about in the last couple of weeks, is a few games ago, we were looking at players like Jacob Murphy and Almiron, Chris's good friend, and wanting more of a contribution from those players who were slightly on the periphery but were playing in a position that we knew that the club were trying to strengthen in the summer. To see these players come in and properly graft and properly be part of it has been really encouraging as well. And those contributions are coming from everywhere now.
I want to talk about some of those refereeing decisions in a moment. But one thing I really want to mention before we go any further is Joe Linton hitting the post and the crossbar within the space of 2 seconds. Oh, he should have scored, Chris, shouldn't he? The second one should be a goal.
The first one's a really, really good header, actually.
It's a great header. Yeah.
It's instinctive, that first one.
Yeah. And instinctively, Joe Linton gets there. And the one sort of defence I will give for him is that the ball is sort of, if you see the angle from behind the post, it is slightly moving to beyond the post. So he has got to redirect
wide,
it slightly
it?
Back to where it is. He should definitely score, but he nods it back across and it hits the post, and then Man United put it out for corner, and bless him. It would be Joe Linton that would happen to. Bless him.
Let's move on to some of the refereeing decisions. There's been a big refereeing debate this weekend again after several incidents across the Premier League. It's questionable decisions, for both sides. But Craig Pawson, George, he didn't really look to have control of the game at times, did he? And obviously Man United surrounded him with the free kick that never was. He didn't look like he was in command. It looked like he was a little bit sort of intimidated by everything. And he's an experienced referee, isn't he?
Yeah, in games like that, you need authority. And I think once you've shown a lack of authority, then, you know, players play up to that. And I didn't feel like he ever, as you say, didn't feel like he ever really had proper control. From the Newcastle perspective, the big decision or non-decision was the penalty on Callum Wilson. It looked like a penalty to me on the television replays they showed over here. What seemed the curious thing seemed to be that although they checked it on VAR, it seemed really, really quick, that check. I mean, not that we can see that actually happening in real time, but it didn't feel like that was one that was deliberated for a long time. I thought that was a penalty. The free kick, I just couldn't. I mean, you know, the screen wasn't zeroing in on what was happening, but I mean, it didn't look like a Newcastle free kick had been taken to me, and I just thought that was a load of nonsense, really. But Wilson, I thought, was very unlucky not to get a penalty.
Chris, for a bit of balance, you're normally the contrarian in the group.
Well, to give some defence to the referee, from the angle, so the Old Trafford press box where I was looking, and it was to my right, and the first angle that I saw of it, when you first saw what Wilson did, I thought he'd lost control of the ball. I thought he'd flicked it beyond, and I thought Martinez was going to get to the ball. So I was actually following Martinez, and at that point I was thinking, I think he's lost control of the ball. I'm not sure. I didn't really see the full contact, but I thought, he's lost control of the ball. He's sort of gone down. And then when you see it again, I do think he has lost control of the ball to an extent, but Varane still comes and takes him out. So I do think it's a penalty. On the other side, I think Man United probably should have had a penalty during the second half. So I think there was a bad decision for either team.
The Sancho one.
The Sancho one. It was the Ronaldo one. It was Trippier on Ronaldo. I thought Trippier did catch Ronaldo at a different point in the game. There was the Sancho one, but I thought that was...
If he hadn't dived as much, if he hadn't lifted his feet off the floor, he might have got a decision there.
And just quickly going back to the free kick, the most ridiculous thing about that was the reason that Newcastle had the free kick in the first place was because Cristiano Ronaldo was miles offside and knew he was miles offside, touched the ball, got it back off Sancho and scored. And it's just like, why did you touch the ball in the first place? You knew you were miles offside. Just typical of what Cristiano Ronaldo was like yesterday. But yeah, back to the original penalty. Yes, I thought it should have been a penalty in Newcastle, but I also think Man United probably should have had one as well, so...
We'll talk about some injuries later on, but we really missed the quality of Alan Saint-Maximin and Alexander Isak, didn't we? It would have been nice to have been able to bring one of those guys off the bench in the second half to give Newcastle a bit more impetus, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think it would have been. I mean, Saint-Maximin, there was a lot of... Before the game, I mean, the news had leaked, but before that, a lot of people were talking about whether he'd start at Old Trafford. I think that he probably would have brought him off the bench, because I think he would have looked to start him at Everton, because he'd be even more important in those sorts of home games, but... Yes, you're again seeing Newcastle are a bit light in terms of attacking options off the bench. One of the ones they bring on was Chris Wood, and that's just, you've got to change the way that you play when you bring Chris Wood on. It's not, you can't play in the same way that Newcastle have tried to move towards this season. And obviously, no Isak for a good few weeks, the one attacking signing that Newcastle made over the summer, their club record signing, they haven't been able to see enough of them. And I think what's been curious over the last few games is that actually Callum Wilson hasn't been in really central to them. Even during the first half at Fulham he was, but then even during the 5-1 over Brentford he wasn't absolutely central. And take out the penalty that wasn't, he wasn't in the game enough, I don't think, at Old Trafford, and that's a slight concern.
Is that because of the lack of service to him, though, because we're missing some of those important forward players, or is it something he's doing wrong, Chris?
I think to a degree it's both. I think that Newcastle aren't finding getting the ball to him enough, but I also think that maybe it's just because he was out for those few weeks and he's still looking for a bit of match sharpness. I don't think he still looks fully fit. Obviously, he didn't last the full 90 again, managing him through these three games in the course of the week. And someone I'm going to be writing about before the Everton game, who I think it would help if he'd start scoring some goals, is Joe Willock, who I think has been very, very good in recent weeks. And Newcastle missed his legs for part of the game at Old Trafford. I thought that ability to sort that athleticism in midfield. But I'm going to mention XG again, just to everyone's annoyance. He has the second highest XG of any midfielder in the Premier League who hasn't scored yet this season. He is getting in the positions. He has had opportunities against Palace. He had two brilliant ones. And he's doing so much in a positive sense. But Newcastle really need goals from elsewhere. If they're not going to have Saint-Maximin and Isak for an extended period.
I was just going to say on Callum Wilson, I mean, he's missed those five games. He missed five games with a hamstring injury. And I sort of wonder a little bit whether he's almost managing himself a little bit in matches. I know from running and having tears to my calf, you know, happen all the time, that when you're recovering from that and you go out, there's almost this psychological thing in your head where you're half expecting something to happen. And it looks to me like he's playing a little bit like that. Maybe only by a couple of percentage points, but he's almost sort of being a bit too careful. Having said that, he needs to be careful, because with the players who are out, if, you know, the idea of Callum Wilson being out when Isak's out, when Saint-Maximin is out, is not a very appealing one. You know, they are going to rely on him. I love watching him play. I love him when he's on the pitch. He does give defenders a hard time, but it doesn't feel like this is Callum Wilson at full tilt at the moment.
It doesn't. Chris, something I wanted to mention to you as well and discuss. We talked about this earlier on at the top of the show, but Dan Byrne playing instead of Matt Target at the minute. If you're Matt Target, you've got to feel probably slightly aggrieved at the fact that you're not playing when you've just been signed. But Byrne, is he doing a good enough job at left back to hold that place down? I mean, he is putting in some performances, but he does have obvious limitations, doesn't he?
Well, this is something a lot of fans are talking about. And I asked Eddie Howe, first of all, about playing Dan Byrne as a left back. This is at Friday's pre-match press conference. And I said, is it a position you see him playing long term? And he gave quite a long-winded answer, but basically was saying, we know he can play in that position. He would probably say that his favourite position is left centre-back, but he likes being higher up the pitch. He's enjoying playing there. And then I followed up by basically saying, why hasn't Matt Target been playing? Now, I knew that he'd had a bit of illness during the international break, and it sort of hadn't really been spoken about enough. So that was why he was initially left out against Fulham. But then obviously Burns retained his place, and it was quite a short answer he gave to me. I don't think he particularly liked the question because he basically ended it by saying, and the results speak for themselves, by saying we've just won two games, scored 9 goals in the process.
Yeah,
and I can see where he's come from, and I haven't been as down on Dan Burns playing as left back as I think a lot of people have been. That might be because I'm not as bowled over by Matt Target as I think some other people are. I think he's good, and I think he's a better left-back option than Dan Byrne, but I don't think he's so massively superior that suddenly he completely transforms the way that Newcastle United are when he plays. Yes, they probably do lack a little bit in attack with him, but I don't think... It's absolutely huge in that sense. And I think physically and in terms of aerially, they gain something by having Dan Byrne there. So I don't see that being... More of an issue I have is I don't see Dan Byrne being the option long-term at left-back. And if he is, I would question why is Jamal Lewis and Paul Dummett, why are they both in the squad? So you have three left-backs, and yet your second-choice left-back at the moment, or even your first-choice left-back, is actually a centre-back, which just seems to me a bit of a bizarre balance to the squad. So I don't think it's likely to be long-term. I think probably one of the next two games, Matt Target will come back in at left-back, and then Eddie Howe has a decision to make, because he seems keen to have Dan Byrne in the team. Does he remove Sven Botman, which would be a huge decision given how he's playing, or does he actually drop Dan Byrne, which again would be harsh, but then you actually bring the left-back in the team?
Just to go back to where we started, we're talking about the best defence in the Premier League. So, you know,
absolutely,
it's not a bad problem to have. And it's, you know, this conversation, I mean, I do think it is interesting because, I mean, I don't think Target deserved to come out of the team. Dan Byrne has definitely not deserved to come out of the team. Botman has looked quality and got better week in, week out. Scherer is undroppable. Trippier is undroppable. Pope has been superb. I mean, how you make all of those people work is sort of fascinating, but it is working, you know. I mean, I love, you know, we're not talking about which centre-half has to get drafted in to shore up a team that's just shipped 5 goals. We're talking about how do you modify a team which is defending better than anybody else in the Premier League. That's fucking brilliant.
We'll be back in a little bit to talk about the Newcastle United hierarchy in a little bit more detail. You can subscribe, though, in the meantime, to The Athletic at a special price of just £1 a month for the first 6 months. And to claim that offer, go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and get access to all of our great writing, as well as ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Sign up now.
Come on, you Maggies.
Hello, James Richardson here, presenter of the Totally Football Show. It's a show about football, and sometimes it's about life, and usually it's about an hour long. This Thursday, it's particularly about the midweek Premier League games, Ten Hag against Conte, South Coast Derby dust-up between Bournemouth and Saints, and the story tradition of the All-West London Brentford-Chelsea clash. I'll be asking dumb questions. Duncan Alexander, Carl Anker and Ahmed Schubel will have clever answers, and you can find all of that by searching for The Totally Football Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We'll be right back.
Okay, lads, in midweek, before the trip to Old Trafford, the press pack got the opportunity to sit down with the club's new CEO, Darren Eales, and the still quite fresh sporting director, Dan Ashworth. Chris, is it fair to say the North East's football writers have been keen to do this for a little while?
Very much so, yes. I mean, I even signed off last week's podcast just about by saying that it was time for them to speak.
The Oracle, Chris Wolf.
The email did drop before the podcast had gone, so we can't claim credit for it. I apologise. But yes, it was something which we'd been pushing for to hear from people at the hierarchy at Newcastle. I think part of the reason why it had been delayed was that we were waiting to hear from the chairman, Yasser Al-Ramayan, and we did then hear a statement, we read a statement on the day before the takeover anniversary, which was mainly just outlining ambition again, didn't have any specifics really, but hopefully that has released the hierarchy who are in place, who are there to speak about football and to speak about the direction of the club to do that. And so members of the North East press were invited to St. James's and to one of the boxes on level 5. Local media the local newspapers were in one box, national newspapers in another. We had about 35 minutes each with... We had Darren Eales first, the CEO, and then Dan Ashworth, the
sporting
director.
Weird Dan O'Neill. Darren Eales. It sounded like weird. I think you need to clarify.
I'm not calling you weird, Darren. I apologise, Darren Eales. That was not what I said.
He's lovely as well. That's horrible.
He is. He also Darren Eales also did...
is this a weird Al Yankovic tribute band? Is that what that is?
Darren Eales later that night also took calls on BBC Newcastle's phone-in Total Sport.
Yes.
But, basically, the interesting thing was, so Darren Eales sort of came in and introduced himself and then answered questions. Dan Ashworth came in, introduced himself, and then for the first 5 minutes, gave everyone a presentation. It was a 5-minute presentation where he had his laptop, which he opened up, and it was basically so he could try and explain what a sporting director is and what they do. And he covered the 9 departments. He did the thing that we've already heard about before. He talked about being the centre of the wheel. He showed himself as the centre of the wheel. 9 departments, which he is the centre of. At Newcastle, spoke about, and then he had another slide where he spoke about relationships between that and how he's the conduit between so many of those departments, and how, yes, transfers are a big part of his remit, but it's just one part of his wider remit. And in terms of transfers, one of the things that Dan Ashworth was asked about was the change in Newcastle United's approach from having for so long been seen as this stepping stone club, this club that you would say you can come here and then you'll get a move to elsewhere, whether the philosophy now is going to change.
Yes, and I'm pausing a little bit there because at some stage you have to trade and there's different sorts of player trading. So one of the things around financial fair play is you have to trade. We have to be able to generate some money to reinvest and go again. Now that might be players where the club has outgrown them. It might be players that are a different stage of their career. But you never can quite control when a club or an opportunity comes knocking for a player that may be something that aspirationally they've always wanted to do. It might be a certain city in the world. It might be a club. It might be a country. And so sometimes, even though the attractiveness of this club has changed, and I think that we'll be able to attract and hold on to our talent by having this journey and this improvement and hopefully, you know, towards the top end of the league and competing for trophies. But there will be times, I can't lie to you and say that we'll never have to sell a player or we never want, you know, we can always be able to hold on to our top talent. That doesn't happen anywhere. Liverpool sold Mane, you know, you have to sometimes make a pragmatic decision to go, okay, look, we'll do that because that's a way of reinvesting inside the football club. But as a rule of thumb, I would like to think we'll be able to hold on to our top talent in order to help drive our ambitions of driving up the league and competing for cups.
On the back of that, I then asked Dan Ashworth about the fact that, because he kept on talking about Newcastle have spent £200 million over the course of 2022, and he said that is unsustainable. So I asked him about the importance of the academy, something we know that he is heavily invested in, and how he sees that changing in the future for Newcastle.
In any club, you want to have multiple strategies and be able to get players into the first team. So you've got here and now transfers that I've just talked about. You've got players that might be out on loan that come in. You might take a loan. So you might sign a player that is a loan player, so at target. Needed a left back towards the end of the window, good player. But fundamentally, a huge part and a huge passion of mine is the academy and youth development. And if we can get players on a regular basis coming through that system, one, it saves a lot of money in transfer fees and wages. And two, it reconnects the club with the city and the local community. You hear supporters all around the world, don't you? Or all around the country saying he's one of our own. You know, the supporters love seeing a homegrown local player coming through the system. So ultimately, it hits a lot of objectives. So the academy in my, again, previous life, first 10 and 12 years of my career was as an academy manager. That passion for developing young players and giving them an opportunity has never left me. And I get more pleasure out of Elliot Anderson coming in and make his debut than signing a ready-made 29-year-old. But ultimately, they're my biases. And all of those things are important in order to give us a nice balanced view of what does our squad look like? Because you need, you know, you need some young players, you need some experienced players, and you need some players that may be coming towards the end of their career to balance that team. And there's no better way of getting that by investing in and helping our academy with the right pathways through into the first team.
So can we expect more Garang Kuyols going forward? Is that sort of thing you're looking at?
Yes, it is. Because, again, I've said in this, spending £200 million in one is unsustainable. You know, we can't continue to do that, certainly, you know, in the current climate. So we have to find ways of getting talent through the building and investing in potential, not performance. And there's a key difference. You know, if you want performance and you want a ready-made player, you go and sign a 24 to 29-year-old that's played 150 games in the Premier League and you know what you're getting. And you're more likely to get something then, but you pay for it. If you want to invest in something that's got potential and you're not quite sure yet, then you have to take a few more risks and you have to be a bit more patient and you have to try and put a pathway together with Shola and his team in loans, Steve and his team in the academy, and us to be able to create those pathways and opportunities for that young potential to come through into the first team.
I just wanted to interject something very, very quickly there, just about that whole notion of selling your best players. I do think it's something that we've got this visceral reaction to, this visceral response to as Newcastle United fans, because however old you are, we've grown up on this horrible, horrible thing where the best players go and aren't replaced. And we can, you know, it could be, you know, we were petrified about people like Kabai leaving, Andy Carroll left for all that money after we were told he wouldn't be sold and then is replaced by Shefki Kuchi on loan. And, you know, going back to my youth, people coming through like Gascoigne, and, you know, incredible players that we produced ourselves, and Waddle and others who then left and weren't replaced or weren't replaced properly. We have this horrible, horrible sort of sickness in our stomach when we think about Newcastle selling its best players, selling the family silver. But this is one of the ways that, you know, we have to get our head around this. It's perfectly possible. You look at what Manchester United have done over the past 12 months. They've brought in something like 200 million quid, but they've got better and they've managed to bring in Haaland. You know, and I think we've mentioned Bruno Guimarães as an example and not trying to get him out of the club. But there is a chance that he becomes a Champions League player. Maybe he's already there before Newcastle are a Champions League club. And so if Real Madrid do come and offer twice as much as Newcastle paid for him, then that is something that they'll have to look at. The difference now is that I would have faith that that money would get added onto the budget that was already there. And Newcastle will then get better as a result of it. Now, you know, they've had an incredible hit rate in terms of the transfers they've brought in so far, and that probably can't go on forever. But you would have a faith that Newcastle would use that money, invest it sensibly, and get better. As I say, I don't want Bruno to go. I love him, but I'm using that as an example. It's quite possible that, you know, until Newcastle are a top four club, that this is the situation that they have to face. And all clubs do it now. All clubs do it.
And just to clarify, Dan Ashworth was asked specifically about Bruno Guimarães and whether he'd leave, and he said, we do not want to sell Bruno. I want to make that clear. But he also made that same point. He also made the same point, actually, interestingly, about Eddie Howe, and he said, for a manager, it's very difficult because either where you are with Newcastle now, if he keeps winning so many games, then he may become really attractive to one of the very top teams as well before Newcastle are quite there. But if he doesn't win enough matches and Newcastle want to get there, he's almost got to win the exact number of matches to remain Newcastle manager over the course of the next few years. And so he was interested in that. So I found Dan Ashworth to be fascinating because he was a lot more open than I expected. He addressed a lot questions a lot more head on than I necessarily expected him to be. And he did that with Bruno. He was honest, whereas at the same time saying that we don't want to sell him, he also said there was one point he basically asked back how much would you guys sell him for? Would you sell him if we got an offer of £500 million tomorrow? Would you sell him? And it's just sort of that question. It's like, well, of course, if you get £500 million, you sell anyone. So it's again nobody for sale. But Darren Eales, we also chatted to, and one of the questions that was asked about him was Newcastle spent seemingly more than they intended to during the summer window. Going into January, is there money for Newcastle United to invest then?
No, I mean, look, I think I've spoken, like, we would normally, you know, summer windows are always the windows you want to try and do business in. I think, as you guys all know, you know, it's summer that you can plan for. January tends to be a little bit overinflated. But I think, you know, from our perspective, I spoke about the journey we're on. You know, we'll always be looking at it and constantly evolving the strategy. So I think, you know, it's a long-winded way of me saying, look, we'll always look at it, and, you know, there'll always be the potential to do things. You know, you can always tinker with the squad. If players are moving out, you can bring players in. But I think it's always going to be summer that we target from a key strategic position, just for the reasons that you have more time to bed those players in.
That's interesting, Chris, isn't it? One of the things I think about when it comes to January transfer windows as a Newcastle fan, because historically we haven't kicked on when we've been in good positions. And one of the things I worry about is that if Newcastle are in a position where we could kick on and potentially get into those European places, are they likely to spend the money to do that? Or will they think, well, actually, we're in the top 10, we're sitting pretty, we don't have to worry about relegation or anything like that this year, let's just hold on to the money until the summer? I would like to see the club actually being ambitious and going for those additional 3 or 4 spaces in the league to try and get up there.
Well, if Newcastle are going to do business in January, it's not going to be dictated by a lack of ambition. It will be dictated by how the market works, who is available, is the right player available for a price Newcastle are willing to pay. And everyone I'm speaking to at the moment, the suggestion going into January is that Newcastle, as they have done the last couple of windows, are looking to be flexible. And so it's that they are not going in thinking we have to do X, Y, and Z. But they would like to do certain things, and if they can, they will look to strengthen the squad here and there. We know Eddie Howe still wants a right-sided forward and he wants a midfielder. They're the two priority positions at the moment. And it may be that rather than sign the player who they think can be the long-term number 6, for example, that might come next summer rather than in January if they think that the right player is not available at the right price. But if they think we can add 1 or 2 players here and really can get into Europe, and the right players are available, Newcastle, I am confident, will go and do it. That is the ambition. It's not going to be for a lack of ambition. It's just they will not act just for the sake of acting. They will act if the right deal is there at the right price.
It's just really lovely and refreshing to hear people talking about Newcastle United from a strategic point of view.
What's a strategy?
Exactly. What is a strategy? But it's really nice. It's really nice to hear them talking about the plans and about going forward. And actually, it sounded like they've got a coherent plan and a coherent strategy going forward into the future. I feel like with those two guys, the club is in fairly safe hands. You know, obviously things can go wrong and things can go right, but listening to the plan, we sound like a proper, sensible, grown-up football club. And I've never heard that before from Newcastle United.
I think that's really important. They were very much aware of the need to talk. And as Chris said at the start of this section, really what it took to break the logjam was for some semblance of a strategic statement to come from the chairman. It was felt that it wouldn't be right for the new people to talk publicly and openly without that having happened first. I think it's been really important because I think we were getting not to a dangerous position, but a position that we were quite familiar with under Mike Ashley, where the only person speaking publicly was the manager. I think that put too much pressure on Eddie Howe, really, answering questions, you know, whether it's about sports washing, whether it's about transfers, whether it's about all sorts of things around the club. And really, others should take the strain for a lot of that stuff. And so I'm really pleased. And yeah, I mean, I don't know Dan Ashworth at all, really. I've met him. I wasn't around for this thing this week. I have met Darren Eales a couple of times and spent some, you know, quite a bit of time in his company. I really like him. You know, he's got big ideas and he's very open. And yeah, it's just very, you know, it's just hugely encouraging that they have these people of substance and stature there who will also keep fans engaged and up to date with what's happened.
As Taylor said, to have strategy, you've got the on one side you've got Dan Ashworth, who is basically he's the brains behind the footballing project. He controls all sporting matters, but equally as important in so many ways, we keep talking about commercial revenues, we keep talking about how much Newcastle need to grow the revenue streams coming in. And one of the things that Newcastle need to do is to make sure that they do grow that. And one of the areas they're going to do that with is through commercial deals, including with PIF. And actually, Darren Eales tackled this head on, and he admitted that Newcastle will look to, where possible, allow PIF to, he said, quote unquote, open doors for them. And he believes that within the Premier League's restructured rules, that Newcastle can still have some very good deals from that.
So a little bit of breaking news, just literally as the podcast was going live, which is always the case, isn't it? Normally they wait until after we've hit record and then drop stuff. But Peter Silverstone has been appointed Chief Commercial Officer for Newcastle United. He's raced his way into pole position for that job, Chris. And that's a bit of news that we weren't expecting today. Don't shake your head at my puns. That's
it's not even
stuff.
Your pun, it was Ollie's. It was the producer's pun that you've stolen
from
before.
Don't give away the magic of recording. Don't be giving away. Don't be giving Ollie credit for this.
Well, yes. So this is a positive appointment, a new position that Newcastle United did not have previously, and it is to bolster that sort of commercial department. We had written about it, George and I, in our piece that a chief commercial officer had already been appointed, and that the announcement was going to be imminent. And that's hugely positive news. And it was a lot of, as George mentioned before, a few of the things that we mentioned that are going to be priorities going forward were discussed with Ashworth and Eales. The potential expansion of St. James's Park, the potential to have maybe a headline sponsor of St. James's Park, something they would address the fans with first if they were going to be St. James's Park powered by a company potentially. They would discuss with fans whether the commercial benefit of that outweighs misgivings fans may have, and explain to them why they would think about doing it. And at one point, Darren Eales even said, "We may have to go to Australia one pre-season, and that might get you your backup left-back." It was just interesting to hear that sort of, the fact that he said backup left-back as well, Newcastle United backup left-backs, it's just like, usually it would be under Mike Ashley, God knows what it would have been to sign a frontline centre-forward, because you don't have one, never mind backup left-back.
We already have 9 backup left-backs.
Well, exactly, yes, we don't need any more.
That's the last position we need to go to Australia for.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, Dan Ashworth was talking about the time that it would take to rebuild the squad. And also, as George and I were saying, that the sort of investment this year is seen as unsustainable. So it was good to have some of what we'd written about reconfirmed in that sense. But also to actually hear people speak on the record, people at Newcastle United, the vision that they have got. So that going forward, we can see whether that has been delivered upon, that people can be held to account as that as well. It's not just Eddie Howe who is speaking. And actually, Darren Eales again was asked about that. And he said, well, Part of the manager's remit is they've got to speak twice a week, both before and after a game, and so he will be the one who speaks the majority of the time. But if he and Ashworth can do a little bit of the heavy lifting behind the scenes and address some of these issues, they will look to do so. And so hopefully going forward, on a sort of semi-regular basis, we may hear from one or the other.
And just very briefly, we talked at the top about whether being good defenders was sexy or not. Saying that Peter Silverstone has been appointed Chief Commercial Officer is like, would feel like the absolute opposite of sexiness. But as we wrote in that big piece, Newcastle's commercial team has been four people. And if you compare that to Manchester United and some of the other big clubs in the Premier League, you're talking about 250 people. I mean, so the gap is astonishing. Newcastle need people like this because, again, the other way of driving revenue, obviously you want to not sell good players if possible. The other way of driving revenue is by bringing in money commercially, and Newcastle have not been doing that. They've not been able to do that. Historically, they've not done it because of the ties with Mike Ashley's other company, which I can't be bothered to mention. And, you know, they have to expand, and they have to do it quickly. And that is really the next big challenge for the club. So, you know, not a sexy appointment in lots of ways, but they absolutely have to do it and they have to get on with it. So it is actually exciting.
Absolutely. Let's have our fingers crossed that Peter Silverstone can provide Newcastle with the correct formula for commercial success.
Oh, God's sake, Taylor.
We'll be back.
No, we won't be back if you keep doing that. Too early in the morning for that shit.
Oh, man. Bless, I keep forgetting that you're miles away from us, aren't you? I just think you're just up the road, but you're not. Time zones and everything. We will be back in just a moment to talk about Everton and Spurs and the increasing list of injuries that Newcastle United have.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So we have a list of The Athletic's Newcastle articles on our running order with the author list beside each one. And today it reads, Chris Isaac out until after the World Cup. What a wicked game to play, Chris.
What?
Chris, who hates music, has no, and is far
Chris,
too young.
You don't know who Chris Isaac
has no
is,
no idea
you?
What that means. I got it. Blue Hotel. What a great song. Wicked Game. What a great song. What a wicked game to play.
Are you all right, George?
No, I was just having a slight seizure. But
Chris, you don't know who Chris Isaac is, do you?
No.
Blue Hotel. I love a bit of Chris Isaac.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you what, I'll never fall in love with you, if that's your kind of attitude. Right.
Wow.
More seriously, though, lads, we do have several games to play coming up soon and several injury problems as well, Chris. We've got a little bit of info from Eddie Howe about the well-being of Alan Saint-Maximin and Isaac as well, but it's going to be difficult without them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the reports going into to the game that Saint-Maximin and Isaac had respective setbacks, and I asked Eddie Howe about it after the game, and he said yes, he described them both as huge blows. So Alexander Isak has re-injured the thigh that he had initially suffered the problem on when he was away with Sweden. It's the same issue, and basically Howe said it's probably likely that Newcastle are not going to see him back in a black and white shirt before the World Cup break in the middle of November. And then with Alan Saint-Maximin, he has redone the hamstring injury, which is a minor injury in some ways, but he's done it now three times. So he's re-injured it twice in the same way. And so Howe said that if it had just been that injury of its own accord, he might only be out for a few days. But instead, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to be very careful. They're going to have to manage him back from this injury, and didn't really give a time scale. So I think it's going to be a course of weeks before we see Alan Saint-Maximin as well. And given how important both of those are in attacking sense to Newcastle, it really is it's a blow, given the number of fixtures they've got to navigate between now and the World Cup still.
Absolutely. Everton, you would think that would be a winnable game, George. Spurs a little bit more tricky, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at all these games now. You don't look at any of them with a sense of trepidation or concern. Absolutely. I'll be back for the Everton game. Really looking forward to seeing it. Feels like it's been a while. Yeah, it's the squad does feel narrow at the moment, or that's maybe not the right word. The squad feels skinny. That is the concern. Can it get through a week like this one where it's three games in 7 or 8 days? That will be a test, but no, you just look forward to Everton as a winnable game, definitely. And then you look at the Spurs game as a good challenge, as somewhere that you know Newcastle will go, and fingers crossed we'll put up a fight. I'm just very excited about that.
And just on a slight positive injury update, it was John Joe Shelby was on the bench at Old Trafford, and that is positive seeing back. Obviously, he hasn't played yet this season due to a hamstring problem. He's come back slightly sooner than expected. Howe said afterwards that he would have been keen to bring him on in many ways, someone who could have provided that pass, but he has to be a little bit careful and can't rush him back. So I don't know if we'll see him against Everton or against Spurs, certainly not starting, but he will play a part, hopefully, before the World Cup, and that gives Newcastle another option. It may allow Bruno Guimaraes to get higher up the pitch if Newcastle change things around a little bit and play Shelby as a sixer in the course of the next couple of weeks. So that is, the fact that he's back is a huge positive, because he was very important to how Newcastle revived themselves during the second half of last season.
Can I just check, Chris, is Fabian Schär okay as well? I need to know.
Fabian Schär is okay, yes. It was mainly cramp, I think, towards the end of the game, but he is fine, and he should be available.
He took a right shoeing, didn't he, against Man United, and he fell down that little stupid hill that they've got behind that goal as well and nearly broke his leg. I was raging at that.
Yeah, and Newcastle had to defend a corner unsafe with 10 men because of it as well.
I know. It's disgusting, honestly. Anyway, I think that's just about it, chaps. Anything else to add before we finish things off?
No.
Good. I think we've done enough, haven't we? One last thing before we go, and I will quickly do this, a little dedication. Today's podcast is dedicated to Joe Allen, also known as the Jarro Elvis, who sadly passed away this week. A titan of the Northeast entertainment scene, let's call him that.
Oh, Chevy has gone, where's it gone? The Athletic.